Welcome to Wednesday here on Turfs Up Radio. I'm Beth Berry. I'm your host for Ahead of the Curb. Today, I got my good buddy Roy Smith with me. Roy, you're a legend in lawn care. But Turfs Up Radio is all over the country, and so some people might not know who you are. Give us the elevator pitch on Roy Smith.
Well, Beth, thanks for having me. I've been in the business for about 23 years. I've been mainly in the distribution side of just helping people and consulting with the supply side of, you know, from all four seasons, lawn care landscape companies, just helping them, you know, combat Mother Nature on a yearly basis, not just in the green space. We also, I've also been involved a lot in the, on the pavement side with the snow removal. That's probably the quickest explanation for me. I've done a little bit of, I own my own company on the side doing snow removal and lawn care and landscaping for about 14 of the 23 years. Sold it in 2014 and have just kind of stuck and stayed in the lane of distribution since then, and just worked on helping guys in that business, you know, consult with them to grow their business and help them try to launch new services and things the right way. And you know, one thing I have, you know, coined is in my career, more so with Advanced Turf Solutions, leaning on me and challenging me with it, because they weren't as involved as I was when I arrived at Advanced Turf, but has been the winner in the snow and de-icing service that our customers offer. And so that's the nuts and bolts of it.
I've told this story before, but I'm at Advanced Turf. One of the reasons, because of the stories people told me about you, and I had never met you before I got here, but you use the word consultant, and that's what your customers call you. They don't say, Roy's my fertilizer guy. They say, Roy's my consultant. He looks at my business. He looks at my program and makes recommendations. You should put this in the program. You should take this out. I know for a fact you visited hundreds of customers' lawns on behalf of our customers when some product or some program isn't working the way they expect. And it's very unique in this industry to find someone as hands-on as you are, but that's why you've been very successful. What geographic region do you specifically serve for Advanced Turf?
My main wheelhouse is the Cincinnati, Northern Kentucky market. But definitely, as long as I've been in it, I've ventured out into, you know, many different states, helping some of our other sales reps, and also helping just through relationships from some of our vendors. I've worked with some other guys in other states, it actually, through the snow and de-icing world, help guys when salt gets short, which happens a lot in any given year. I've helped bail some guys out in other states, in Iowa, in Illinois, in Missouri, Ohio, Indiana, Michigan. Down south, I've helped a lot, primarily in the snow business, help bailing people out, just helping them figure out how to get salt in areas where they either A, don't get as much snow, and some show up and they're kind of caught with the bag, not really knowing what to do. And so I've been around more than just Cincinnati and Northern Kentucky, but that's my primary daily function, is helping that market.
One of the things I love about Advanced Turf is within our organization, we have amazing sales managers and sales reps like yourself who help us keep the business moving forward. But you are a product manager for our salt and ice business. And when I arrived at Advanced Turf, I knew nothing about this because I had worked for mostly big lawn care companies like Scott's Lawn Service. And we tried to avoid it, Roy, because it was a big pain in the butt. We would get big Brightview contracts. So let's say we had Lowe's or some daycare centers, and they would part of the contract was you had to have the ice melt or the snow removal. And so we would outsource it because it just seemed like a hard business to be in. Yet you and I know a lot of folks who are in it that are very, very successful. So if you were talking to one of your customers who owns a turf and ornamental business, and let's face it, the winter months are pretty rough on cash flow. Some do a prepay or find some other ways to keep technicians busy. Why do you think snow and ice are a great companion service line for a lawn and turf and ornamental company?
Well, definitely, you know, the keeping all your good health, you know, year round is probably first and foremost. That's it's always a nail biting session when you let your guys go for a few months, you know, with just a verbal agreement, thinking, you know, knowing they're going to come back. And, you know, a lot of these guys are going on unemployment until then. They may try to, you know, they'll try to find a temporary job, but sometimes that's hard. And especially here recently with all the change we've endured just in general, just in business in general, a lot of guys, you don't know, they could go on their, you know, their 2 to 4 month, you know, leave and find a different opportunity, because a lot of people are definitely making a lot of changes for their personnel. And then when it comes to starting back up in the spring, you may have a struggle getting some of your guys back, you know, depending on what the circumstance is. So, you know, having snow as another service is definitely a positive thing for that. Secondly, you know, your next thing that's, you know, huge in the lawn and landscape world is your equipment. So there's a lot of equipment that just becomes idle for several months. So if you can transition for a few months to service the snow and de-icing world with that equipment, it's a positive thing there, because you're now generating dollars with each piece of equipment as well to help pay for that equipment, upgrade for new equipment, and all good things. So it's, to me, it makes perfect sense to do it. And probably thirdly, the last thing is, if you are in, you know, the full maintenance side where you're cutting grass and, you know, trimming landscapes and mulching and doing the full maintenance package on some of these big commercial properties and big commercial warehouses and stuff, a lot of the times included in the contract or right there behind that contract sits the snow and de-icing portion, that it's just, you know, it's another piece of the whole gambit to be able to get into a lot of these commercial properties that are out there. And it's another service to help make you be able to be that one-stop shop customer that you're trying to service in the commercial end. So, you know, with those three things, I mean, that would be probably, I don't see why anyone wouldn't want to try it. I know one of the rubs on snow and de-icing is the fact that it's, you know, the weather has to be here to be cutting grass and other things. I mean, obviously weather can impact the volume of service or how the service is provided. But in the snow world, it's either you got snow and ice or you don't. And so that's the only rub on it that I think would be the part people may, you know, have the hesitation. But besides that, I mean, I know when it rains, it pours. That's one of Morton Salt's sayings, and it applies to the years that we should.
Roy, we are going to take a quick break and talk to our sponsors here. We will be right back. Thanks for that intro. Oh my goodness, it's beginning to look a lot like Christmas. Perfect timing for today's episode, because I got my buddy Roy Smith in the house. Nobody knows more about snow removal and ice melt than Roy Smith. Roy, welcome back. You were teeing it up in our first segment about why it makes total sense for T&O companies to get into the snow removal space, because they got all these people, they got all this equipment, and they got contacts, right? Customers who are going to call someone to do it. So why wouldn't they call them first? I love the piece about the people, because if you're crossing your fingers, hoping those guys are going to come back February 15th, they've had lots of options. They've looked at Amazon warehouses and all the other places we lose technicians to. So I love it when you can keep technicians employed year round. We know that improves retention. And we know if you retain your technicians, that you are definitely going to have better lawns and you're going to retain more customers. But you mentioned equipment. You're going to utilize some of that equipment. If I'm a T&O company and I'm thinking about getting into, let's just say, blade snow removal, what are the minimum requirements to do some commercial parking lots, whether it be the truck type itself or the types of blades that you would get to go along with that?
I mean, depending on the caliber of the space, and what I mean there would be just the size and you know, of pavement that would be involved in that property. I would, you know, minimum, you definitely probably want a truck. You're going to want that a truck to have some sort of a spreading device for salt and or chlorides, I should say, and then you're going to want, you know, some sort of a blade to push if and when we get enough, you know, when there's enough snow that you've got to plow first before you salt. But you know, there's a lot of different ways you can set it up. Probably the most introductory level would be, you know, a half ton truck with a tailgate hopper and a blade on the front. And all you would do is you could just buy, you know, pallets of 50-pound bags of rock salt, put in the back of that truck, and you run around, you load the hopper, you get anywhere from a 250, 300-pound hopper all the way up to, you know, a 1,200-pound hopper, I think, on the tailgates. Maybe not 1,200, maybe like 800, I'm sorry. But you can load those, you can load the hopper just with bags. A lot of guys do that, believe it or not still, but then in the maintenance world, you know, when you are cutting grass and doing mulch, a lot of times you'll earn a skid steer or some a little more of a common name people call it a bobcat, which is actually a brand, but a lot of guys just call it that. But you get a skid steer, put it on site, you can build you a bin, and you can start ordering your salt in bulk, and then you can turn around and have a 3/4 or a 1-ton truck with a blade, and then you put what's called a V-box spreader in the back of your truck where you can just load with.
Did you say V like victory?
Yeah, V like victory.
Oh, it's shaped like a V, isn't it?
Yep, and it'll fill the whole bed, and so that you can, you know, take scoops with the skid steer and fill it, you know, with just loose bulk rock salt and get it down, spreading it and plowing with that same truck. But you know, minimum, you definitely are going to need a truck, a salt spreader, and a blade. But then you can take that, you know, if you do it that way, then, you know, depending on the size of the lot, there's push boxes you can buy. Then you're depending on how you set your skid steer up, you can turn the skid steer into, you know, being a multi-functioning tool on the property as well. You can make it where you can take the blade or the scoop off the front, change it to a push box, and you can use it to push snow. And then they also make salt spreaders that hook to the front of the skid steers that you can take once you get done pushing. You can go switch over. They've got these boxes you can buy. I think the company called Boss that makes those. You can hook up to them. Then you can go and actually even spread salt with a skid steer. So you can take about any piece of equipment that you would buy in the lawn care and landscaping industry, and there's something that you can almost convert it into some sort of a snow and de-icing removal tool for that service.
Where's a good resource to buy hoppers and some of the other equipment you've talked about? I know we don't sell the equipment at Advanced Turf.
A great, you know, here locally where I'm at, probably one of the more, you know, sought after places is going to be called Crescent Springs Hardware. They're a full service lawn care landscape contractor business. On top of, they've got a hardware store that has just about anything in it. But they've got years and years and years of experience understanding the evolution of all the tools in snow and de-icing, and even in lawn care and landscaping when it comes to mowers and different types of things to move, like your mulch around and things like mechanical wheelbarrows and things. So you really want to look in your geography for a place that is set up in that way, that you know has a long time experience, has been around, to really, they've got a history of how the industry, with all the services you provide, not only just the snow and the icing world, but there's places about everywhere that have a reputation that way. And like I said, here locally, Crescent Springs Hardware is probably the number one place, I would say, that guys are calling on the Kentucky side of the river and in the Cincinnati, North Kentucky market. And then, there's a Coffin Barkers is the place in Cincinnati that people call. It's been around a long time, that does a really good job with setting up trucks for snow and de-icing. They're another place that does a good job outfitting trucks and has a long time history. They can work on things. You know, some guys have plows that are old, and some guys just buy new, and they can do old and new. And that's what I would look for in your geography, is some places that you know have been in your world, so to speak, or in your trench, helping understand what you're up against when you're out there providing the services that your company provides.
And it's not like the equipment is huge when you take it off for the off season, right? You don't have, you don't need a bunch of space to store the blades.
That does tend to be, you know, a challenge, because a lot of guys don't typically have the shop and whatnot for that. So yes, that is something that I would say, actually, there is some space requirements. But the nice thing is, a lot of these things, you know, they're designed, you know, they're out in the snow, they're getting salt, and, you know, they're getting damaged, you know, chloride damage and the elements. So you can get away with storing these things outside and they still, you know, do okay. But because they're designed to be outside, they're designed to be beat on. So, you know, I've got several customers that they keep all their stuff outside year round. It gets rained on and whatnot through the spring, summer, and fall. And then they hook them up. I mean, you might have to do a little extra maintenance storing them that way, but once you can store inside, I would highly recommend, you know, trying to, you know, set a goal to get your any piece of equipment inside for when it's not in use. It just is definitely going to give it a better shelf life. But you can minimize, depending on what you go out and shop. There's definitely companies that are trying to design things to help that. I would just tell you to, you know, definitely visit like the GIE Expo that's every October. Go, there's another one, there's the APWA trade show every year. I think that one's usually in like January or February. But I would definitely, there's SIMA, I would visit that trade show every year. It's a moving one. It travels around the country in the snow region. I would try visiting them. You can really get your head wrapped around all the innovative things that are currently going on, and the things of the past. So you can figure out some of those challenges and not let those deter you from you know, growing your business and having availability of this service.
So I love what you said about tapping into your customer base. What if your customer base is primarily residential versus commercial? Does it still make sense, or are you going to make most of your money and money per hour because you don't have to travel on commercial work?
if you're residential and you're in the lawn care, just like the applicator business, there's definitely some things that you can take advantage of and kind of keep your ear to the ground and have, maybe we call it a Kwanzai service in the snow and de-icing world. A couple things we I've got a few customers that have started to do is with the residential side is they'll order talking a little more technical with the calciums and the magnesiums and the different chlorides for safety and pests and some of that stuff. And what they'll do is just like they'll do to, maybe offer grub control, or they're offering their aeration or some sort of soil enrichment, additional application or something that they're looking at, or let's say there's just some freak bug or fungus that's an anomaly this year that they're selling into. Well, they'll put out a flyer and they'll talk about selling 50-pound bags of rock salt and just charge a little bit of a premium to just deliver rock salt or de-icing products just to people's doorsteps in the routes that they provide during the season. And then some of them will do, they may just invest in like a four-wheeler, or they may have a four-wheeler laying around that they keep like a 100-gallon little sprayer on or something for some odd little spray job they've got, maybe a vegetation control or something. Well, they'll turn that into maybe getting a plow on the front of it and then having two guys a plow, with a couple shovels and a four-wheeler with a plow on it, and maybe even just like a push spreader, and they'll run around the neighborhood and clear people's driveways and sidewalks just as another service they can provide to all those clients as well. So it's definitely something you can do for, whatever the customer is, residential or commercial. And there's definitely, as I've mentioned, many ways to skin the cat. So I would say, I'd challenge them to try it first, selling 50-pound bags to their customers of rock salt or a de-icing product and see where that takes them. I think they'd be surprised what they would start to accomplish.
I love that idea. So when I was at Scott's Miracle-Gro, we did a lot of market research, and not on the do-it-for-you side really that I was on, but on the Scott's four-step do-it-yourself program, why it was primarily men when so many women owned homes, did a lot of the maintenance on their homes. And, pushing a spreader isn't that onerous. Most healthy women could do it. And so we wanted more women to get into the do-it-yourself side. And we had created, it almost looked like a Dyson sweeper. It was called, I think, Snap. And it had these cartridges you popped in, because when we talked to women, they're like, I'd love to do my own lawn, but just like they didn't want to buy water softener salt at the grocery, they didn't want to buy those damn bags and drag them in the house and pick them up and then spill it all on your lawn and figure out how you're going to get that picked up. So I think you are onto something here where your customers really do want to have that hanging around, and they don't want to have to call someone or get out at the last minute on days like today where we're getting ready to have what will hopefully be a site. Well, hopefully if you work for Advanced Turf selling ice melt, not hopefully for most American homeowners, but to know that your lawn care guys, let's say on the last visit of the year, you've dropped them a note or you send them an email right now saying, do you know that we deliver ice melt? I would love that, because I'm thinking about swinging by home. I'm at a hotel in Pittsburgh right now. I've either got to swing by the Fisher's location, or if Home Depot's closer, I got to go home and do that tonight. And they will pay for that. And you can charge it to their account. And also, by the way, you're top of mind in the month of January when you wouldn't ordinarily have been top of mind for them. So even selling those bags kind of keeps you in the game, doesn't it?
Oh yeah, and there's all kinds of little things that you can just to get your brand out. you could go as far as to order a bunch of 5-gallon buckets with lids with your logo on it, maybe has your services on it or whatever. But you could deliver it, and you could just, instead of maybe selling the bag, you could take time to move it into these buckets and then deliver it where you can keep that you know, your residential customers will have that in the garage with your logo on it as a keepsake. You know, a lot of people don't throw buckets away. If they're clean, they'll keep them to store things in later, you know. And so there's a lot of little things you can do. You could also talk with your Advanced Turf rep, or if there's not Advanced Turf in your area, you could talk with your, you know, your rep that you buy your ice melt from. And you can look, there's little $10 and $15, $20, like little hand shakers and things that I know we stock some different types of application tools for rock salt, you know, for more of a residential application. So you could get into having little add-ons like that to where you could also deliver those. And, you know, you can always on those, if instead of private labeling, you could always, you know, find a blank spot on the shaker and order stickers and put your logo on each one of them too. You know, just little things like that you can do to keep your customer buzzed about your brand on top of just having another thing to keep some of your good help busy during those months.
God, most people, when I say your name, marketing wizard is not what comes to mind, but here you are just dishing it out. You know, I think about all the logoed crap I get. I'd kill to have an extra bucket in my garage for washing the car or washing the floor or whatever it is. That's a great idea.
Yeah.
What about if you don't have, what if you're just getting into this? Are there some types of commercial properties that are pretty easy to market to? If you say I'm new in snow removal and ice melt in the area, where would a turf and ornamental company maybe go first to pick up some big accounts?
Yeah, you can easily get, you know, I know in our market, we're a pretty fluid growing market, and I feel like, you know, a lot of America is that way. There's so many new restaurants, there's so many new little boutiques and stores and things, and if you just take time to pass your card out in them places, a lot of the times those people are new business owners. They've bought these, you know, they may buy these properties under a lot, like right now I know there is a from the last administration, there's an opportunity zone tax incentive in a lot of areas. You got to look it up. It's on the internet. But if you go into those opportunity zones, you're finding a lot of new business owners that are buying properties because of this tax incentive. And so if you can focus on those areas, then that's a perfect target to find people that want to give new people opportunities because they're in the same boat. So a lot of times you know, especially when you get into the cities where these are, where there's not as much grass and maybe landscaping on these properties, there's going to be more pavement and rooftop area. These areas, those are great areas to start if you want to get into more, you know, larger, you know, better paying accounts, on the commercial end. But, you know, after, you know, besides that, again, you just got to look for places when it snows too. The great thing is when you see when you see someone's property that is not clear, that obviously means that your competition's struggling. Mm-hmm. You can go in there and capitalize on that. So it's very easy to visually find new business during snowstorms because you find out who is not getting and who is not taking care of their commitments as good as they may like, because of whatever the condition may be that they're struggling, but you can capitalize on their struggle if you just are driving around watching, because it's very easy to tell who's not getting serviced. And I'd say most businesses want to be number one priority so they can open their doors safely for the next day.
I would agree. So on the opposite side of that coin, are there any types of accounts that are a pain in the ass or that you should maybe avoid?
I mean, without getting too opinionated, I would just say personalities probably would be more of a, or that would be the answer to that question.
Yeah.
I mean, you definitely just want to make sure it's a business. You know, if it's a business, you want to make sure that you know that they are, you know, a lucrative business or a business that's not, you know, a failing business. I wouldn't, you know, I would definitely, you know, kind of pay attention to the surroundings of what you're stepping into. But you know, I don't really think any business is necessarily bad unless the person you're doing business with is probably struggling. And so I would just say, you know, kind of just pay attention to your surroundings when you go into them places, kind of have your check boxes of credit worthiness ready to make sure that you're not going to go do this service and then someone's going to, you know, stiff you on it. Cause I definitely can tell you in the snow world that can happen, because it's not like grass. It doesn't keep growing. Once the snow melts, people kind of may try to forget about the service you provide. That sometimes is one of the negative sides of this business. Is there's, you know, when the snow flies and it's a very active weather pattern season that's in our favor, when it comes to the business side of this, there's definitely, there's some negotiation that you may have to submit to get your customer through it and to get yourself through it. So you got to kind of, you know, as you get better at doing the work, when you pick up these larger accounts that take more resources and stuff, you need to definitely just try to communicate well with who you're doing the business with, and make sure they're communicating back well, so that they understand that the expectation they're asking of you and what it costs, they're gonna be able to afford that. Because sometimes they'll change it up and maybe only have you do a partial push and a partial application or whatever on an area instead of doing a whole area like they may want it to be, just because there can be just so much snow that they just don't have a budget built for it. Not that they meant it to be that way, but those are some of the things I would watch out for, is just understanding what budget maybe a larger property would have built for snow removal. I've seen some nightmares out there when it comes to these bigger places, and not realizing that, you know, a $40,000 budget's now all of a sudden a $120,000 budget. That's not what they, you know, or what they should have had. And definitely you got to have an ebb and flow there. If and like I said, as long as you keep that communication open, I would say everyone should be able to kind of adjust. But other than that, it's a matter of, you know, it's more just a business sense. You just need to pay attention when you go to pick these new accounts up.
Yeah. Okay. You brought up a great point. Budget. This is one of the number one questions I get, and I don't answer it because I have no idea. How do you price snow removal and ice melt services? And to your point, you have a $40,000 budget, and the next thing you know, it's $100,000. I know, because we sell the product, it's pretty difficult to look into the crystal ball. You'd almost wish that a big company, on a year where they didn't spend much, go ahead and put that in a savings account, because maybe it's going to be 3x next year. But how do you structure pricing? How do you encourage turf and ornamental companies to structure their pricing for snow removal and ice melt?
You know, so traditionally, as long as I've done this, a lot of the pricing just comes out basically by the weight, some sort of price per weight of the product applied for melting the snow or ice. And then some sort of hourly fee, depending on the caliber of equipment that's built that needs to be ready for the event.
I see.
And then on top of that, some guys, depending on, they'll grade the properties. You got to remember, this is a service, is not like any other service. This is another little thing that you got to wrap your head around when you get into this. Unlike cutting grass or treating lawns or mulching beds and all that stuff, this is actually an emergency service, and that's how it's perceived by the public. So one of the things that you gotta realize there too is there's an expectation fee, I would call it. I don't know if that's the right way to say it, but that's how I'll say it. But you either gotta have basically a zero tolerance, or you kind of put a level of obligation to how many inches of snow, or, you know, what do they want? You know, what kind of expectation do they want? So a lot of times guys will come up with different fees. Like, they may call it a readiness fee. So they may have a monthly fee even that's incorporated that's So they'll have so many pieces of equipment set up on each property at any given time so that they make sure it's taken care of. A lot of hospitals will have these kind of things. A lot of your shopping centers will have these kind of things during certain periods and dates because of the holidays and different, you know, times of the year that they're trying to capitalize on. You may have, depending on, you know, different types of religious establishments in the area, some of your more mega establishments will have different, you know, tolerance levels because they've got a lot of activity going on. They may even have school, you know, private schools involved in them and things. So those kind of things will you'll kind of have a grading system, and that grading system may also have some sort of fee structure that you want to apply to it. But that's pretty much what's out there as far as how people are charging, you know, and billing out for the service.
I'll go back to when I was working at Real Green Software. We had turf and ornamental companies that would structure a snow removal program. Like, let's say it's Chase Bank and they want it plowed every 2 inches. And so we would set up a program of recurring services so that the snow removal person could charge them for every 2 inches. Is that more common, or is it per event? What would you say is a more common structure on that?
I would say, and this is my opinion, you know, you get different markets and there's pockets of things that go on, but someone would maybe say I'm off a little bit, but I'm going to say that for the most part, you know, people are going to charge more per event. I think even the contractors are starting to put their foot down with some of the different accounts that want to get too in the weeds, so to speak, about inches and things, because snow falls throughout a geography. I mean, perfect examples. I mean, this year, I mean, the forecasters, like today, we got another storm coming up through a lot of the eastern side of the U.S. snow belt. And the way it's tracking right now, you can't tell how far south or north it's going to push. And so as it's coming in, they're telling, you know, depending on where, like I know in my geography right now, we're being told that the storm's going to push north and there's going to be less snow to the south, more snow to the north. Well, that's pretty general in my opinion, because that's how it should be anyway. Because typically the further north you go, the cooler it is, the further south you go, the warmer it is. So
right.
The forecast is creates what I call kind of a paralysis by analysis on the customer that the contractor is calling on, because they don't do the service and understand like what has to go into it. So what happens is that grading system that I was talking about on how to charge, what happens is when people want you to go under these 2 inches and you know, some of them will say it's when the snow's done, that's when I want you to show up. I want you to push it or treat it after it's done, which is fine, but then you change your priority level to that contractor of when we're going to come and be there.
Right.
So a lot of times, you know, that would be, go back to the question you asked about what is a good customer and a bad customer. That's where there's, you know, there's going to be a different, you know, engagement of that customer. So I would say, you know, if you're a contractor, I would probably consult you in the direction of doing it per event, because all the events are they will be completely different, and you can't, 2 inches can fall over 4 hours and 2 inches can fall in 30 minutes. It's not really, I wouldn't recommend picking those customers up. And if you do, they just need to be told that and understood that they're on their plan B or plan C. You got to take care of plan A first.
Great, great point. There's so much variability. So for instance, driving over from Indianapolis to Pittsburgh this week, we had snow Sunday. It lasted, I don't know, maybe 2 hours and then it was gone. But got in the car, leaving our Fisher's office, and made it to Greenfield, maybe 18 minutes away. And on the north side of I-70, tons of snow. But imagine if you're a contractor and the customer says, well, what do you mean you charged me? I didn't get any snow at my house. Yeah, well, they did across the street. It's just not an exact science. We're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, Roy, I need you to educate me on all of the different ice melt products and what you really need for most of what we do here in the Midwest. And we'll be right back after these words. We are back with my guest, Roy Smith, just in the nick of time for another big snowstorm here in the Midwest. Maybe, I don't know, that one we had, Roy, in December before Christmas, it was as cold as they said, but, and we did have a white Christmas, and I was grateful for that, but it was rather insignificant from a snowfall perspective. So we never know which way Mother Nature is going to blow. But one of the fascinating learnings in my time at Advanced Turf is all of the different ice melt products available. So first off, tell us where we're at this year from a supply chain perspective. Where do babies come from? I mean, ice melt and all those products. And what do I need to look for if I'm a turf and ornamental company and I'm into the ice melt business? What do I really need to evaluate? So teach us all the things, Roy.
Well, I mean, the first thing is just geographically, where are you located? What does the storms usually, you know, on average from the current average of data we have, how do they come through your area? Obviously, you know, we ended this before the break. We were saying how the north is cooler and the south is warmer when and part of that. And I would say, you know, further north you go, you're going to find that most guys are going to be doing a lot more plowing and then treating after the storm. They will also be able to pre-treat. So I like using liquids on my pre-treat side, just because it's not as you know, let's just say as nasty of a application. You know, the liquids are, you put them on the pavement, they're not cleaner. It's not a bunch of granules laying there. It's cleaner. It's a cleaner look, and you can put different things down just like you can in the granule world, but you can do straight calcium, straight magnesium, you know, or straight sodium. When you get north and you're dealing with cooler temperatures, sometimes sodium is going to take a little longer to activate, because the colder the temperature typically means the drier the snow is. It doesn't have as much moisture available to it that comes along with it. So it's not really a snow you can pack. It's going to be a lot fluffier. So you're going to find that rock salt's not going to necessarily start. It's not going to, You can put the right rate down, but it's just not going to activate as quick. You're not going to get that salt brine going as quick because of the lack of moisture. So with that being said, a lot of times you want to add a calcium or magnesium to the mix so that you can activate that salt. Those products attract moisture, so they will actually take moisture from the air, from other places than just what's in the snow, and also help get a little bit more out of the snow that's there, so you can get that salt really working. But typically in most of our, really in all of our area, salt is good enough. It's just having enough moisture to get the salt working. So that's where you would want to start, you know, diving into the other chlorides, you know, specifically magnesium or calcium. Potassium is used to a degree. A lot of potassium is used in a lot of specialty circumstances. It's not very good for an ice melt. Rock salt pound for pound is by far value and production wise, it's the best melting product that there is out there. When it comes to you know, the calcium, magnesium, they are better, but the value of them just is, you know, it's triple to four times the amount for the same amount of product. So, and you typically will find yourself using higher amounts of those products depending on the type of storm, just due to the residual salt. has the best residual. So definitely salt would be my go-to for all, you know, parties involved, but having some magnesium or calcium, some sort of magnesium or calcium in your tool shed is definitely a must, depending on how the storm comes through with ice and temperature involved. Like you said, when we started this, that December Christmas, that right there before Christmas, that storm that swooped through here, you know, it was so cold. So many people found that, you know, using just rock salt, they weren't really getting it done. They needed to have a little something hotter out there to help activate that rock salt, because there just wasn't as much moisture attached to that storm because it was so cold.
Interesting. Are there any components in the products we use and sell that, I'm probably not going to say this right, but let's say it's a start-stop event, as a lot of them are. Let's say over 8 hours it's going to start and stop. Are there any types of those products that you apply it, it melts what's there, but maybe it retains better for, you know, let's say 8 hours to continue to melt through the rest of that event, or do they all do the same thing in that regard?
Well, rock salt, again, would be, it's rock salt can only go into water at 23% its weight, or the water's weight. So when you're looking at calcium and magnesium, they can actually go into solution at a lot more of a rate. So when you're using magnesium or calcium, they're going to 50 pounds of magnesium or 50 pounds of calcium can wash out of an area quicker than 50 pounds of rock salt, because so if you put down the same amount of any of them products, when you put rock salt down, it's going to have a lot longer residual, because water can only pick it up at 23% the water's weight, where water can pick up calcium and magnesium at a way higher rate. So, you know, again, with that being said, rock salt pound for pound has the best value of all of the chlorides that I've ever been shown for de-icing.
Interesting. And what about concern that you could burn the turf? Are any of these products better than others, or are you just advising the service delivery technician to be cautious not to get it onto the turf area?
Well, they all are, you know, they all at some point, you know, in abundance are going to be harmful to the turf. That's just the case. I would say through my own, you know, my own research and development, just from watching with my own naked eye, magnesium is probably the safest out of the chloride family for, you know, vegetation damage. But, you know, if people get the right tools, make sure they have the tools that put the stuff on the target and not outside of the target, typically you shouldn't really have a lot of issues. That's, you know, most issues, if not all the issues that do arise come spring with vegetation, it's usually applicator error, not really, you know, having the right tools to get the right spread and the use rate right. Salt should only be put down at about 500 pounds to the surface acre. And I know as I walk and talk through every season with different shapes and sizes of these business, a lot of it is bid at 700 to 1,000 pounds per surface acre. That's what the arithmetic that's being used out there. But if you read, you know, university data out there, and also challenge yourself to understand the rates yourself, you only need about 500 pounds of rock salt per surface acre. The problem is again, when it's colder, guys don't realize that there's not as much moisture in the snow. And that's why this, you know, a lot of your newer guys in the business don't have that information yet. So they don't realize that when it's cooler, you don't need to put more salt down. You need to use something different to get the moisture flowing. So it's you know, rock salt for sure, pound for pound. I think Cargill has a YouTube video you can check out that actually one of their professors talks about this exact topic in a very good detail to help you understand, you know, why rock salt's the best product.
Are you less likely to burn the adjoining turf if, let's say I'm a homeowner and I need to do my driveway and just the walk to my front door, should I grab my handy Scott's spreader and do it, use one of those little hand things? What's the best service delivery method if someone's out there, maybe not doing it for business, but doing it on their own property to ensure they don't burn the turf?
Yeah, I just get you like a little hand shaker, you know, okay. Or even just, you can even just be, you know, get MacGyverish if you, you know, if you do any type of cooking, or just a plastic container with a lid. If you just take it, you know, take a razor and cut like a nice little pattern in it, that'll help kind of shake it, you know, break up the pattern a little bit to get you a little spread as you're shaking it around. Just, you can make your own little makeshift container to go out there and shake it around on your sidewalk. It doesn't take a lot, you know, you'll find, especially if you're buying like an ice melt that has a little mixture of some mag and calcium in it. That's a rock salt heavy product. That's usually got a different granular size that gets a little better cut, gets more particles per area because it's a smaller granular than just buying straight rock salt. But, you know, it's something to be said there. In our world at Advanced Turf, helping our customers, this brings another upsell to help make a better yard or a better result in the residential world. Is, and you can also attach it to like families that own dogs. Is there's products that we can help people get that you can apply in the spring and the fall that will help attach the salt and get it out of the system to where it doesn't, where the plant doesn't have time to take it up, and get it, you know, and flush it through where the plant doesn't have to process it just as the salt, so that it doesn't harm the vegetation. So there's, you know, there's also some things to be said if people are, you know, wanting you to provide a service and they're worried about their vegetation, and then on top of it, if they have pets that pee in the lawn, they can use this product to, in the spring and the fall, and kind of capitalize on the conversation. Well, hey, we do treat your driveway and your sidewalks, or we know you treat your sidewalks and driveway. You may want to consider using this product to help make sure your vegetation stays straight come spring and fall, and just in case you got a little heavy on the application of salt.
I love that. Okay, so wrapping up here, tell us about supply chain. Is this another scarcity issue, or is it starting to level out, and where do these active ingredients come from?
You know, salt's supply chain is pretty much the same it's always been. It's a problem if the snow's very active, and it's always going to be that way.
Supply it's demand, not typical supply it, demand.
The main thing that you want to make sure that you do is you want to make sure that you align yourself with supply that is going to consider winter last all the way through March, and not give up, you know, because they know they have to transition into, you know, the upcoming spring season, and not just shut you down and leave you hanging on it. That would be one of the first things I'd look for. And then the other thing I would challenge people is to, you know, salt is, it's a product that, you know, every year there's always new people that come into the fold and old people that leave the fold of supply. And what happens with that is some people just aren't as, let's just say, as they don't have the tenure of understanding the, you know, what goes into it. So some people may have some money they want to invest in, and they hear that, hey, I can make money selling salt. And what happens is they find out it's actually a pretty hard business, because Mother Nature may not show up for you. And if you're too geographically isolated, you can really frustrate a bunch of customers, because what happens is they'll get nervous. They won't value the salt, you know, in a comparable frame with the people that's been in it for a long time. They'll end up being a lot cheaper in values. They'll sell out, and then they don't have any to keep people going, because they don't really know that you got to be there for your customer. Because, you know, I had a conversation today before I got on here with two guys that showed up today. I told them, I said, you know, I can't promise I can help you come, you know, the whole season, because I haven't had you all season, and I don't want to, the guys that have been here from the beginning, that's who I planned for. And I, you know, so get in my line on the front side, and I can help you for the whole season, because I can understand a little more how to supply it. Because it's a business that you can't, you know, nobody wants to have any left over and taking up space. Especially when you're dealing with things that have calcium and magnesium in them that attract moisture, because if you don't have the right storage capabilities, those products can set up and basically ruin over the summer, and you can have, you know, block salt when it comes the next season, and it can become where you got to handle it to reprocess it to be able to use it. And so, you know, what I'd mostly say for supply chain is make sure you know who you're buying your salt from. Make sure they actually understand what chlorides are. And just, if you have space and you can store it and you know you'll use it, definitely, you know, just stay stocked at least halfway through winter. And then maybe you lean on your distribution a little bit as you get into the later part of the winter to be your storage if you have to. But you definitely, you know, possession of salt, 9/10 of the law, is what I've always said. If you don't have it, there's a chance you're going to get let down, because it's not a real easy product to move around. There's plenty of it, but what happens is it's just not easy to move around. I mean, a lot of it comes up the river system from the south, and you got to do it by barge and rail to make it to make the value position right. You can't do it in 20-ton each increments on trucks. It just make the price of it be through the roof to even use for the service. And the problem is once these, you know, once the river system in anywhere that they're bringing it off of a barge or vessel, once they run out, it's not real easy to just get another barge docked up and unloaded into any given geography. So you just got to make sure you're paying attention to who you are getting it from, because you want to make sure they're going to try to stay with you through the whole winter, and they know what they're doing as far as how they get their salt, and they don't have just one option to get it to you.
Interesting. But go back to one thing.
There's definitely, what's that?
Go ahead and finish what you're saying.
I was going to say, for supply chain though, they're definitely this year on the bulk salt end of things, there is some little anomalies that's occurred with the Mississippi being flooded and stuff. It's definitely made the inventory on the front side of the season be light, with all the freight values that have been very unstable over the last year and a half, 2 years, that have, you know, we've seen freight double and triple in certain things over the last year and a half, 2 years. And that has caused hesitancy in some of the imported salts and things that in chlorides that come from outside of the United States. It's caused for hesitancies of them to ship into this country, just due to the fact that people worried if the people's even going to take them and things, because of how much more they're going to cost due to what they got to add to the value of freight. But I think I do think that there is enough salt to go around. I think definitely newer guys in the business could find themselves struggling to, if they don't have spaces to store it come late season, if it's active, there could be some issues getting some of your bulk salt and stuff. But for the most part, it's business as usual, because it's how it rolls anyways. If there's snow and ice in the forecast, that, you know, and it just keeps coming all winter, it's what happens every year. But I don't think you know, I don't think there's anything really to fret over, but definitely ask your supplier if they've got, you know, how they're sitting for the whole winter. I would definitely at least keep your ear to the ground there to make sure you're going to get service.
Go back to one thing you said about storage, because you don't know how much to buy, right? Like, possessions 9/10 of the law, so you want to have enough. But if you have the proper temperature or moisture controlled facility, how long can you keep bags of salt and it not, I don't know, does it get hard? What happens if you don't have the right environment?
I mean, if you can keep it inside, I don't really think it's got like any predetermined shelf life. My recommendations, if you've got something that is a blend, an ice melt blend, that's going to be dominant with salt, but you're putting a calcium or magnesium in there. I mean, I like to see people try to get rid of that within, you know, let's just say 48 months.
Got it.
As long as you've got it stored inside and stuff, because any, you know, depending on, you can always have an issue when you have something that attracts moisture to it in the bag. But for the most part, I mean, we've had years where we've sat on material and as long as it was the stuff that we were keeping stored inside, it was fine. But for those that do buy rock salt and store it outside, I definitely can tell you that you can buy bagged rock salt and store it outside with no problems. But you definitely want to, you know, find someone in your area, go to the nearest, or call around to the nearest, you know, maybe if you're near a river system or something in this business, I would call around and find someone who can come and cover your rock salt through the spring, summer, fall. They can, there's several companies that you can call that will come and basically build a custom tarp around your pallets. If Ooh. You've got to keep them outside,
okay.
That will keep the weather off of them. That's definitely, I highly recommend that if you're going to be sitting on a lot of salt, because you didn't have a very active season and you bought what you thought you'd use.
That makes sense. That makes sense. Roy, I appreciate your friendship. I love everything you shared with us today. I don't know anyone else in the industry that knows what you do, and you're always taking care of turf and ornamental companies. How can our listeners reach out to you directly if they need to buy salt or ice melt products or just need more information?
You can call my warehouse. It's 859-283-1172. You can ask for me or leave a message for me. I'm usually there. You're more than welcome to shoot me an email at rsmith@advanced. That's with a D on the end of that, turf.com. But yeah, that'd be the best. Or just call your, if you're in Advanced Turf's area, call your local rep. And they can get a hold of me as well, or call your whatever warehouse that you would be serviced close to. Call them, and they can reach out to me, or find you one of our very knowledgeable reps that can help you, or can help you through me. They can call, and if there's something they can't answer, they know that any of them can get a hold of me to help.
You are the best. Thanks so much for being here. Be safe, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, Beth. It was my pleasure.